more. And number three is to be an ally, right? Use our privilege. If I own, I have it. Let me use that to shine a light on the cracks of where some of these biases show up. I hope my privilege allows me to maybe see things differently, you know, to pay attention when my black and brown colleagues and teammates and friends, when their lights dim, you know, check in with folks. Step up. We hear, you may have heard the term micro inequities or microaggressions. That can cover a wide array of things, but it's really everything from even using the term articulate, and it comes from a place of being so well-intentioned, but this is probably the number one thing I hear, especially if I'm a person of color, and I'd love for Rashiki to respond to this as well. I'm a professional, I'm doing a great job, and you compliment me and say, Melanie, you were so articulate, that's great. In my mind, it can easily trigger me to think, well, I'm a professional, of course, I should be articulate. So particularly in this space, it can be heard more in the pejorative, or to be coined in a group of people as you people. Well, what do you people want to say about that? You know, ouch. It's a little sting that can have a tremendous collective impact on people. And while I myself am on a journey, I'm white. I know I don't know what it means to be black or brown in America. But I do know that when we know better, we do better.
You've mentioned, Melanie, mm-hmm. you've mentioned a number of things that are all introspective. What do people like me need to know right now? They've all been introspective. Here's something to understand, and here's something to dwell on. Rashiki, let's go over to you. When you and I talked about this the last time you were in the studio, one of the points that I took away from it was that the black folks out there have to be extra perfect. In any situation, they've got to be extra perfect. What else do you feel like people like me need to hear based on what Melanie just said?
I totally back up everything Melanie just said. And piggybacking off our last conversation, I said a black man, when he shows up, he has to be perfect. And a non-black man or a Caucasian male, he just has to be present, meaning that we can come there and do everything absolutely right, have all the right credentials, and just because of our skin tone, another hurdle is placed in front of us. Also, the thing is with the inclusion and diversity, I own a business, and I don't hire based off ethnicity. I based off a particular skill set and the experience of the person that's hiring, applying for the job. If a qualified person whose personality fits in and their qualification goes with the mold of my business and their ethnicity has to be outside of my own race, you know, I don't care. Welcome aboard. I hire for skill set. I don't hire based on color. So everything that Melanie said earlier was spot on. I think that we really and truly, it gets a lot of stuff get lost when we start talking about terms because these terms hadn't been really defined. White privilege. White privilege takes on so many different meanings. And once there's no one way, for me, the term white privilege can be seen also as I always say that race is a facade for classism. You know, race always gets stoned and it keeps everybody on the class that's not the elite or the high level fighting amongst each other, and the real power lies in unity, and that keeps us divided. So these terms are meant to keep us pushing away from each other because once a white person hears the word white privilege, they go on the defensive. And white privilege gets thrown around on my side of the fence every time something happens, when a lot of times it's not actually the color of their skin, but the financial situation that helps get them out of situations.
Can you project, I'll start with you, Rashiki, on this question. Can you project what our world would look like, what our community here would look like, if there was none of this bias present? Have you thought about what it would look like and how we would communicate and get along differently and perhaps how our daily schedules would be different if this weren't present? Is there this utopia? Have you ever thought it through?
I live that utopia every day. I walk into my gym. the world would look just like my gym. You have different people from different races, different backgrounds. Myself, I'm an ex-felon. I'm the leader of the pack. Then we have people that are financially, economically way superior than other people. Then you have people who are just barely getting by. You have people who's always been a righteous person, never veered off the path of righteousness. Then you have people like myself who veered off and brought themselves back. And we have people that's constantly struggling, different political views on everything. And we get in that gym and we talk and we laugh and we joke, because I think the one thing that we've gotten right at Next Level, because that's what I feel like that world would look like. It would look like my gym. What we got right is, regardless of what you subscribe to, regardless of what adjective that you put on yourself, we operate from the aspect of humanity. What do you bring? What do you do? How can we help? Your person will always outshine your skin tone, your integrity. So that's how we operate inside of that gym. And we fuss, we get angry, hug it out, and we start again the next day. And we laugh and joke. And you've seen it firsthand. So that's what the world would look like to me.
Melanie, somebody has to ask you at some point when you're doing these corporate trainings, and let's face it, your clients are Fortune 500 groups. They're really the top level of business acumen in the nation. Do you get the question, and do you have to defend it? Why are we doing this? Other than the right thing to do, what is the benefit of going through this type of thing, particularly if you agree with Dr. Greenwald in his report from 25 years ago? It's nearly impossible to eliminate bias. So we're going to shine a light on it, and 72 hours from now, we're going to be back in the same mode. What when people test you on why are we doing this if it's impossible to eliminate, what do you say?
I like to respond with this. Nobody, because we all have bias, nobody in this world is responsible for the first thought that we have about another person. But we're all responsible for our second thought and, more importantly, our first behavior. And I love what Rishiki said. The person will outshine your skin tone. And inside organizations, if we could get that same mantra going, if we can allow the person, their skill, their talent, their ability to rise to the surface, if we can break down the systems that are act as barriers to inhibit that, I think we're going to be headed in the right direction.
Many years ago, Melanie, I was brought into the U.S. Postal Service to deliver generational training. It all happened around Washington, D.C. And one of the executive pulled me aside and said, listen, Cam, we're doing this to prevent lawsuits. And I said, excuse me? I thought this was good training. I thought this was to help you out. I thought you were, you know, in the enchantment of my charm and you wanted me to keep coming back. He said, yeah, all that. Also, we're doing it to prevent lawsuits so that we can say so-and-so had the generational training program. We made them sign in. Exactly why they said that or why they did that, I don't know. We played our defense. They went through the training. It's their fault, not the Postal Service's fault. Do you feel, Melanie, like some of your clients are hiring you and getting you to do this purely out of defense, or are they truly interested in making this change?
I would tell you, especially at this time, it is coming from a place of truly wanting to make a difference and change. I have had clients who right up front told me that they were in it for strict compliance reasons, and I have actually backed out of my work relationship with them. I just, at my core, cannot personally support that. Although I have had conversations with folks who say, well, at least you've gotten your toe in the door and maybe you can affect a more systemic change, a bigger change. But we'll see how that plays out down the road. But I do believe more organizations, especially today, are really coming wanting to know, what can I do differently? I don't want to make change that happens for 3 months or 6 months. How do I make it last?
Rishiki, I want to ask you a question on a lot of this this bias conversation, this corporate training. We got a minute before break. Do you've got a small business, much like my own. What do you see the effect of that being?
I really see it as a defense for a lot of people, because the atmosphere that's right now, The atmosphere is becoming so oppressive. Nobody's scared to move. Everybody's scared to say the wrong thing. So I really, there are people that are really genuine, but if you were really genuine, you wouldn't have to have these diversity and inclusion things in place because you would already be operating from a place of integrity. So this would be the norm for you. This wouldn't be something that you have to really scurry around to try to make happen. But like Melanie said, there are some people who really and want, and they have been on the forefront of change and of identifying these things, where you have some companies now who are being forced to look at themselves and say, okay, maybe we wasn't diverse enough. Maybe we do need to take a better look, a step back and look at what we're doing. And also from the point of view is, you know, nobody wants to be sued.
Let's come back after this break and talk about the anger that's so palatable out there right now and what we can do about that. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston, brought to you by Regions on the Line, Melanie Miller, Rashiki Leatherwood, our conversation, Implicit Bias. We'll be right back. Rashiki Leatherwood is the owner of the gym in town, the best gym in the world. Melanie Miller is the world's best trainer on diversity and inclusion, and I've brought them together to discuss inherent and implicit bias, both of those things. We've got a full agenda in the remaining time today. Rashiki, I want to start this next segment with you. There's so much anger out there right now surrounding this delicate issue. So many folks not only want justice, they want raw justice, and there's a difference between the two. Raw justice means a pound of flesh. Somebody needs to pay, and these memorials are coming down. Even here in Mobile, defaced, destroyed, some of them should come down, in my opinion. You know, maybe it's time. We take a hard look at ourselves. Maybe it's time, but there are those that claim those very same memorials bring them pride, and they want those who deface those memorials brought to the same raw justice. What do you think about this? What's the best way forward?
I don't pretend to be the voice of the community, but I will say this. If you ask a person and they tell you, do they support, are they on board with the way our history has unfolded from the beginning with the owning of slaves and the racism and the bigotry and the bias? If they say no, then you have to ask yourself, why do you want to hold on to those statues? You know, it's history. It's written in books. But I will say that the defacing and destruction of these monuments are only galvanizing parties on both sides towards what looks to be a civil war. And here's my honest take. If the parties on both sides refuse to let go of their bigotry and their anger and realize that it's far greater for us to build a brighter future for our country and our children together than it is to hold on to a disgusting and repulsive past and remain divided. You know, I'm always telling, you know, people I talk to, we own the better sins of our fathers when we refuse to acknowledge the pain and destruction their actions have caused and then find a way to work towards reconciliation. So, you know, those statues and taking down stained glass, hey, none of that is really, for me, we're taking a veer off what really needs to happen. Take them down. I don't care. They stay up or go down. What really needs to happen right now in 2020 is we need to have a real conversation about what's going on. Where do we start? Not just a conversation, but put a plan of attack in action. Where do we start at, and how do we move forward? First thing we have to do is get legislation to start holding people accountable. And then that's the biggest thing inside. I can look on the black side of the coin. The black side of the coin is that you have so many cases where these black men and women were killed unjustly, and then you have the officers or the perpetrators getting off, you know, slap on the wrist, get off. So after seeing that happen so many times, justice becomes, you start seeking that raw justice because, you know, you're not heard, and then violence is the voice of the unheard. So right now, we need to find a way to not only hear the unheard and quell this anger, but also to find a remedy to this and some accountability. The word reform is being used way too much. We've been reforming forever, but it will reform itself when there's some accountability in place.
The accountability comes from all levels, from all people.
All levels, everybody.
It's not just one side needs to be held accountable. or the other side being held accountable. Melanie, what's your take on the anger and the destruction of the property as a result of it?
Well, I've never been an advocate of this destruction of property. But I will say I heard a quote recently, and it was, history is to be remembered, but not all history is to be celebrated. Exactly. And it immediately reminded me of the Holocaust, of course. And so I think it is important to remember our history, but I think also we can't pick and choose which pieces of our history we want to, you know, yay, I want to celebrate this great piece of it, and I'm going to act like this negative piece of it just didn't happen. And so that's why I think it's so important to, we've got to educate ourselves. In Alabama, you've got the Legacy Museum in Montgomery, which if you have not gone, it's a beautiful in the sense of so well done. It displays a history of slavery and racism in America. It's really, if people aren't familiar with that, what a great opportunity you have there in the state. But learning, as you start to learn more, it really does shine a light on how things can be perceived differently. I was doing some work in Mississippi, and an African-American colleague of mine, we went at the same time, jumped in a rental car. I happened to be driving. We were a mile away from the airport, and there was a house we passed with a huge Confederate flag on it. And she said, whoa. And I said, what? And she said, did you see that huge Confederate flag? And I said, yeah. She said, please don't stop around here. Don't stop for gas. Don't stop for food. She said, it makes me really nervous, and clearly I wouldn't feel comfortable here. And I thought, wow, you know, here's another example of my privilege. I wouldn't think twice about stopping at a gas station or grabbing a snack somewhere. But for her, it really triggered a visceral response. And I think for a lot of folks, having a statue that represents, you know, for a lot of folks, ancestors who were lynched, you know, that it's a different experience for them. So maybe we have a great museum where we can take the statues, don't tear them down, don't rip them up and don't deface them, but take them and move them into a museum, maybe that's just for those statues.
There are so many people that would just rise up at the very thought of that. And while it's a logical and sensitive and compassionate answer, I don't understand the anger that so many people hold on to that very idea. And I admit what I don't know. I don't know where the anger to that idea comes from, but it's very palpable out there right now. A friend, I want to bring another question to you. A friend in corporate America reached out to an African-American subordinate on his team and said, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you in all this mess. And her reply was a huge thanks and gratitude for recognizing her turmoil right now. And I want to hear what you both think about that, because here I am, let's face it, I'm a 51-year-old white dude, and I've been taught over and over again, you don't notice color. That's not a part of the palette that we see. So I don't want to reach out to this female, playing this thing out in my own mind, who is obviously struggling, who is obviously going through something. But if I acknowledge her, that very acknowledgement says, I notice that you're different. Yet we're all supposed to be the same, is the way I've always thought it. And I complimented my friend for having the bravery, for having done that. I wouldn't have done it because I've been told we're not supposed to do that. Rashiki, what do you think?
Whenever I hear somebody say, I don't see color, I don't trust them. I see color. I just don't let color influence how I deal with you. That's when it comes, like I said earlier, your person will speak louder than your color ever will. I think your friend in corporate America did something that was honorable. Speaking up to that young lady, you know, it probably helped her restore her faith in humanity. And, you know, that's to not be seen. Right now, it's really hard for people on all sides that do not operate to the far left or the far right on either side. It's really hard for them because they've been poor. You have black people having to qualify their blackness by some asking to stay away from their white friends and all of this. And you have white people who are siding with just what's right, whose families and friends are disowning them. So everybody's, you got these group of people who are just really genuinely good people who are stuck in the middle, and they're being pulled every which way, and they don't know where to go. And it's good to have somebody say, I'm thinking about you, because right now it's a mess. It's a complete mess. And for a person like, say, like myself, because I feel like I'm a bridge in Mobile, because I have a multitude of white friends, a multitude of black friends, and just about everybody, just every ethnicity. And I bring people together. So I don't, people pull and expect things from me, but I know what my purpose is. And I know the lane I play. So I'm not going to go one side or the other. My job is to be the bridge. My job is to find some common ground where everybody can stand on. And then we build that bridge toward each other. And on that bridge that we're building toward each other, we can go towards helping each other heal. Because it's going to take both of us, both sides, or all sides, having these conversations, open-minded and honest, in order to get to a place of healing.
Melanie, your thoughts on the comments my friend made to the young lady?
I think your friend was very courageous and very brave and did a great thing.
I hope he's not listening. I hope he's not listening. His head is already big, and this is just going to swell it to a pop.
Well, I will tell you, many years ago, I was doing some work in St. Louis, and this was after Michael Brown was killed, and I was sitting in a client's training room. There were probably 27 white people in there, one young African-American female woman, and we had a break, and when we came back, I opened the floor. I said, you know, would anyone like to ask any questions? And she raised her hand, and in my mind, she gave me this look like, okay, I'm gonna go there. I hope you've got my back. At least that's how I interpreted it. And I tried to give her one back that said, I got you, go. And she looked at the group, and she said, just outside this window is Ferguson, Missouri, and there are people there getting killed that look like members of my family. And at work, it would make me feel included, because we had been talking about what would people need to do to make you feel included in the workplace. And she said, it would make me feel included if my colleagues would just come in the morning and stop by my desk and say, hey, I just want to check on you. How are you? Are you okay? And she said, I'm not saying we have to have a discussion to discuss racial justice in the world. I'm just saying I'd like for you to check on me. And I watched the blank looks on the remaining faces in the room. And I said, you know, this is a great time. Let's have some conversation. I said, for the other folks in the room, how would you respond to this? And most people said, oh my gosh, I would be so afraid to do that. I wouldn't want to say the wrong thing. I wouldn't want you to take it the wrong way. I would feel bad if I said something that might make you feel worse. And it was all centered around this whole notion of they had great intention, but they consciously did not want to have a negative impact. And then we heard her share. She said, I just would love for you to check on me. And so when we saw the murder of George Floyd, and some of the first conversations I have with some of my clients, I encourage them to do just that, to check in with their folks and just hold space. If there's anything they want to say, you know, just to give them the opportunity. And there's nothing wrong with saying, as Rashiki said, you know, I don't have all the answers as a white person, but I'm willing to lean into being comfortable with the discomfort. So I'm not here to solve anything, but if anybody has anything they want to say, I'm here to listen.
Melanie Miller, Atlanta, Georgia, trainer extraordinaire. If you want to find more information about her, text What's Working to 44222. Rashiki Leatherwood, Mobile, Alabama, one of the best trainers in the history of mankind. Don't take that personally, Rashiki. Very, very good. His gym is full. Don't even bother coming by. His gym is full. Excellent conversation, folks. Thank you so much. We'll be right back with Scott Tripoli, Grand Hotel. You're listening to What's Working. Again, a special thanks to Melanie and Rashiki. Always an excellent conversation. They came prepared. Their willingness to talk, I appreciate it. Usually at 1:52 p.m. about now, we highlight the show. And typical of me, absolutely enthralled with the conversation. I did not make one note. However, you will be able to hear the show again if you want to, or send it on to your friends later today by going to whatsworkingcam.com. We'll have it posted there probably in the next hour or so. you can listen to it, send it on to the people that you want to, that you feel should hear this show. Again, thanks to the two of them. On the line now, the general manager of the Grand Hotel, Scott Tripoli. Scott has been the guest on the Extended Aversion regular edition show Wednesday PM. Scott, thanks for your time. Welcome back to What's Working.
Hey, thanks, Cam. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and it appears the Grand Hotel is doing great, too. And I say that from one exploration of trying to find a room there to celebrate my wife and my anniversary, and was left breathless at the prices there. You guys seem to have gotten back on your feet. This autograph collection affiliation seems to be working for you, huh?
Yeah, it is. We like everyone else, have gone through some very interesting times here, and back in the throes of the pandemic at the very beginning, March 12th, 13th at the beginning there, and then all the way through May, we were very, very low occupancy. But, you know, we work for a great ownership who kept our resort open and operating, and we have a great membership, and they stayed very busy and active playing golf and tennis. So we stayed active over here, but had to furlough a lot of associates, and then coming into our busy season, which really is the height of it, is Memorial Day to Labor Day, and we were able to really take advantage of that. And really, as fast as we shut down related to business, we opened back up. So it's I would tell you, shutting down was much easier than opening up.
I bet.
Getting staff back and getting everyone trained, and we've been running the last couple weeks around 75-80% occupancy, and it's been very busy, and we're happy to be able to be that place that people can come and feel safe, and we feel like we're doing all the right things.
How many of your former employees were available to rehire when you opened back up, or did you have to go back to a new well and find new people?
A combination of both. We called all of our associates as we needed them. We had to be very exact on that. We didn't want to call people back because, as you know, a lot of people are enjoying this extended unemployment by our government.
Yep.
And that's been a challenge to get people back, quite frankly. But those that have come back, I think, see it's well worth it. And we've gotten a lot of them back. I'd say 85% to 90% of the staff that was here prior to the pandemic are back working again. And we've had to hire some others. As a matter of fact, we have a small hiring hall tomorrow for specific positions. We still have people who are on furlough, but its positions are specific to jobs here, and so we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, no kidding. So many of the hotels, I was talking to Lou Ann Pappas over the Scarlet Pearl Casino a couple weeks ago. Her interview will air tomorrow night, but they have they took the time to really do some deep cleaning, build some new facilities around the casino. When you were in such low occupancy, did you do anything to change the footprint of that great hotel?
You know, we really didn't. We went through our grand transformation from 16 to 18 here, 2016 to 2018, and we did a lot there. So really, when we got into full pandemic mode, where we were really occupying 8 to 12 rooms a night in a 405-room resort, you can imagine the overhead that goes along with that. So we did furlough a lot of associates, and we turned our leadership into our hourly jobs. So our leadership was doing all the to-go food, and the only hourly associates really kept on were in our membership side with golf grounds and, of course, hotel grounds to keep the hotel looking spectacular. And then some of our golf and tennis associates, but most of the managers were the ones that were working, and they were doing such a great job. And we had jobs for everybody. I was even cutting grass at the golf course, cutting the greens or the tee boxes and things like that a couple days a week. And we were all, kind of spreading out and doing what we could do to make an effort, make the effort right and take care of people.
I love hearing that. I love hearing that. So tell me, I know I've been there a couple of times for your 4th of July celebrations. We were guests at your hotel a couple of years ago for that, had all our kids. It was fantastic. But my suspicion is that people are already putting blankets out on the lawn to get their 4th of July spot for your fireworks show.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's a little different this year. You know, the social distancing aspect of our industry and really the whole world right now is very important. Taking care of our guests and our associates is paramount to our success and making sure people feel safe. And so we have cut back the festivities a little bit related to attendance. We're having to close it off to anyone except hotel guests this year. And generally, our Lakewood members would come to that, and unfortunately, due to the social distancing guidelines that are out there, we didn't set them; they were set by our government. We have to abide by that, so we're having to cut back a little bit related to the attendance side and really protect those who are staying at the resort. So we're doing that, but we're still doing our fireworks show, and we're doing great activities, but it's going to be fantastic, and we're looking forward to it.
It always is. It really is. It's one of the signature events, I think, in the Deep South at 4th of July, and I feel lucky to have been a part of it. Do you have any rooms still available?
We have a few rooms, yeah, we do. We aren't selling to capacity, again, to protect our guests. We're not selling every room. We're selling to a certain number, and I think that's the wise way to do it and the right way to do it. I will tell you that even if you can't come watch the fireworks, you can see them from all around. So it's not if you have a boat, get out in the water, watch the fireworks, and if you have a friend that lives along the bay or just simply park across the street and take a good look at it. But there's a lot to see, and we're really looking forward to a great show. And if you want a room, please give us a call, and if you book a room, you can come watch the fireworks.
Yeah, that's a great incentive. It must kill you as a guy in the hotel business, as long as you have, to willfully not want to fully occupy that hotel, to be satisfied with 80% capacity or something like that.
Yeah, it's been a struggle. I mean, it's not something that we want to do. We've realized through the starting back up and getting busy that it's the right thing to do, whether it's the business-minded thing to do. It's definitely the right thing to do by our guests and our associates. And we're selling a lot of rooms. And I think that when you look at capacity and you look at the difference is we're in season. Every room has four or five people in it right now, and that's really the kicker. If it was group business with one person per room, I'd sell all 405. It wouldn't bother me. But the bottom line is we're selling rooms, and it's really, three to four to five people per room. And so it really it drives a high occupancy number of people around the resort, and we've got to protect everyone as best we can. And we're doing social distancing here. We're promoting it. We have signage up. We're all wearing masks. We're all doing the right thing, and I feel like we're doing a great job with it.
Scott Tripoli is a general manager of the Grand Hotel in Point Clear, one of the world's greatest hotels. I'm into superlatives today, if you can't tell. Folks, on Thursday, I'm going to have Chester Elton, the Carrot Principle. If you've read that book, he'll be on the show with us on Thursday. Thank you for your time, Scott. You're listening to What's Working, brought to you by Regions. Talk to you Thursday.